Imagine finding the perpetrator of a crime through a detailed analysis of the grass in the background of a photograph. Not only is this possible, but it was this type of painstaking work which resulted in the identification of a child abuser and 45 of his victims. This is the kind of work that Meath man Detective Sergeant Michael Moran does in his job as a criminal intelligence officer with Interpol in Lyon in France. He's in Ireland this week and he's with me in studio. Mick, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now tell me first of all about that intriguing case.
Well, that case is just typical of the type of one we get. Child abuse material is taken during the abuse of a child. It's commonly referred to as child pornography. And it's taken during the abuse of a child and is shared then between like-minded people on the internet. So what we do at Lyon is we try to gather all that material together in one place for the purposes of blocking, stopping duplication of effort, etc. And then using analysis methods, we try to find the victim within.
So these guys go to a lot of trouble to give you nothing in the background, a white wall or a blanket or a sheet or something like that.
Absolutely, yeah. And the bottom line is we just analyse everything. We use every means possible, kind of analysing everything in the background of the picture in an effort to identify what country it comes from. And once you identify what country it comes from, you pass it over then to the local police to deal with.
But they started on grass and decided this could be the northern hemisphere, yeah, and then they look at rocks. And what country could that be? I mean, this is amazing stuff.
If I showed you a photograph, Pat, of Vico in Italy, you wouldn't really necessarily know it. But if I showed you Vico Road in Dalkey, you'd spot it straight away. And the idea of that we do is we try to identify elements within the material, be it a movie, be it an image file, and we try to identify something within it that we can go to the expert in that subject and say, "What's that?" So we've often done it, say, for example, we'd call in plumbers and we'd ask them about a heating fitting in the background and say, we'd pass it to some people within our network and we'd say, well, we suspect that this is in an Anglo-Saxon country, so we'd pass it to all the American...
A simple thing would be, if you saw a three-pin plug in the background, you'd know it was Britain or Ireland, sort of thing.
Yes, but don't forget then you have certain other countries like India use the three-pin plug, so there's other elements in that as well. But yeah, exactly, that's exactly it. Certain things in the background can identify countries.
And the result of that grass analysis ultimately, and a lot of other stuff that followed, resulted in the guy being caught.
That's right. And you see, the thing is to try and get somebody somewhere to take responsibility for this. That's the internet has made it so global that this material is out there in the ether. And trying to identify what national police, because there's no such thing as international police per se. We would be in an international role, but to get somebody to pay attention to it, you need to identify it as being theirs. Yes.
So if you discover something happening in Britain, for example, and you figure it's London, you ring the Met and you say, this is what we've got, boys, you take over.
Exactly. Well, rather than ring them, we have a network of victim identification specialists all around the world and we work virtually together. And so we pass it via that method. Another good example, if you wanted it, was a case that popped up in Australia where a video turned up in Australia of a couple of young girls being abused. It was sent to us. It was a Northern European language. Now, in the old days, you see, the Australians would have just prosecuted whoever had it for possession or distribution. We took it on. It was a Northern European language. We invited in the Dutch. They listened and said, it's not ours, it's Flemish. We invited in the Belgians. The Belgians came in and said, not only is it Flemish, it's the city of Bruges. And within a couple of hours of it hitting the internet, we had police on the ground with pictures of these children trying to identify them.
You're actually on secondment from the Garda Síochána to Interpol.
To Lyon, yeah.
Yeah. How many of you are in your team and what kind of expertise have you all brought together?
Well, there's only five of us working this in the child exploitation end. As you know, child exploitation is often very local. Apart from, say, the travelling sex offenders who travel to destination countries, the internet has introduced this new kind of international dimension to the whole area of child exploitation. So we have, there's myself and a Swedish colleague and a Norwegian colleague, an English colleague and an Israeli colleague, and we work together basically handling all aspects of international child exploitation from a coordination point of view.
Were you doing this kind of work in Dublin before you headed off?
That's right. I'm actually here in Dublin because I'm graduating from UCD with a Master's in Forensic Computing and Cybercrime Investigation because I had started, that whole course is done by the computer crime section, the computer section over in UCD. And before I left Ireland, I had started to work with them and Garda Síochána have been very closely involved in the working of that. So
We'll talk about another operation, and you mentioned Vico or Vico. You actually had an operation called that, Operation Vico. What was that about?
That's right. That was a case where some German officers took down some material, had found some material out on Usenet, on newsgroups, and they downloaded the material, and in it there were a lot of the victims were plainly visible. They were obviously Southeast Asian. There were other clues that gave us Cambodia, they gave us Thailand, so we were pretty sure where we were. And unfortunately, in those countries, capacity isn't great, so rather than concentrating on the victim in this case, as we do with the other cases, in this case we concentrated solely on the offender.
And had the offender photographed himself?
That's right. He was in the photographs, but he was in the photographs having swirled his face using a filter that you'd find on Photoshop or even smaller, less expensive photo editing material. So he had twisted his face, and a German officer managed to untwist his face, and it was a great success for us in the sense that here we had a man who had posted this with the arrogance onto the internet, and we had taken that and undid his hiding technique, if you like, and we were in a position to publish his face on the internet and asked public for assistance to identify him.
How long before you caught him?
Once it was on the internet, and we had copies of his Facebook page within a couple of hours.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what you get when you ask the public. You know.
Now, you mentioned that unusually in this case you focused on the perpetrator rather than the victim. Tell me why your focus is primarily, as a starting point at least, on the victim.
It's very important to remember, Pat, that we call this child abuse material because that's what it is. This is material that is it's not pornography because there's no consent. It's not socially acceptable. You know, so we don't use the expression child pornography now. We accept it's a legal term. But it is child sexual abuse material, and child sexual abuse empirically is proven to happen within the home or very close to the home. 85-86% of it is happening at home or in the home. So the reality is, if you find a victim, you find a perpetrator. Yeah. Now, your normal Peelian policing systems are all about prevention and then the apprehension and prosecution of the offender. We have to start thinking a little bit differently. The internet has changed that for us. We have to start thinking in a victim-centric way. And it's the easiest way.
It also gets what you're looking
correct.
For, which is the perpetrator.
Correct.
But your imperative is to stop the abuse
Absolutely.
Of the victim.
Absolutely.
That's the imperative.
Absolutely. And we have a very clear split between new material and old material. We are confident that anything that has come into the hands of the police and has been forwarded into our network is analysed in real time. So when we see new material, it's new abuse. Generally speaking, it's
because
new abuse. It's actual abuse happening at the moment.
What you're talking about, these people who swap material with each other, often there is absolutely no money involved. These are people who like this kind of stuff and willingly trade or swap with each other.
90, well over 90% of it is pure like-for-like trading. And why not concentrate on the victim in that case, you know, because...
Yeah.
Especially where it's new, it's sexual abuse happening at this moment in time, and really the imperative is on the police to deal with it and try and find it and stop that abuse.
Now, most of the stuff that these guys are hoarding, and often you'll hear of an arrest where they had, you know, thousands of images of children in abuse situations. How much of it historical? I mean, would there be people who are now well-grown adults who are still pictured as children and still out there in the internet ether?
Absolutely. And if you were a victim of child sexual abuse, Pat, and you were, you know, 8, 9, 10 years of age, and then 8 years later, the material, you're trapped forever in that picture, in that abuse.
20 years later.
You're trapped forever in that abuse, Pat. And that's one of the saddest aspects of this stuff.
And that's the key to your work, is finding the new material. That means a child is being abused right now.
Right now. And you see, again, if I bring you back to that startling statistic that 85-86% of this stuff is happening in the home, then it's happening in homes who have computers and who have cameras. So the perception by members of the public that child pornography is all Eastern European and it's all Southeast Asia is wrong. The vast majority of the material we're dealing with is under 10 years of age, and it's coming from your white middle class homes in Ireland, in England, in USA, Canada, Australia.
And
France, Germany,
you're
name
suggesting
it.
Then it's parents who are photographing their own children.
The relationship of the victim to the abuser in image analysis done recently showed, in the region of 74% of the relationship of the material, it's all parental or very close to the family.
And are there gross acts of indecency, or are parents maybe just photographing their children naked and peddling them?
Well, Pat, this is an open, you know, a family radio show, and I wouldn't like to get into it, but I can tell you that the vast majority of material we're dealing with involves rape and gross sexual assault, and it involves children from 10 down to 18 months and even younger, pre-speech children and even younger. So that's what we're dealing with here. We're not dealing with, you know, teenage girls, you know, and soft focus on the beach. This is not our business. Our business is very much rape and sexual assault, gross sexual assault of children.
Yeah. You can't talk, obviously, about Irish cases, but you can confirm that we are not, this island of saints and scholars is not immune from this kind of activity.
I think you can look at the newspaper any morning, Pat, and you'll see that we're certainly not. Because, you know, any of these news stories that come out about interfamilial abuse of children, even involving, you know, with our clerical issues that we're ongoing, struggling with, the bottom line is that any of them, those abuses, if they were photographed and recorded and then that was subsequently published, that's out there in our pool of material.
Now, the kind of work that you do, the old, if you like, the Peelian way, Sir Robert Peel and the Peelers, of knocking on the door and hello, 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 you don't have to do that. You're actually with a keyboard a lot of the time.
Yeah, a lot of my work is online, is understanding how the internet is used by these people to commit these offences. And ultimately, you know, we could be out there every day of the week kicking indoors, catching people in possession of this material, catching people distributing this material. But ultimately, we try to concentrate on the victim and the child and to remove the child to safety from this horrible situation that they, through their, you know, through no fault of their own, have found themselves in, you know.
Now, you mentioned that you've got intimate contacts with the other police forces around the world. Do you ever have to sort of get out there yourself and do the legwork, visit these places and help them maybe to understand what's going on?
Absolutely. I mean, there's occasion we would do a job. Say, a very good example is that Vico job, where there wouldn't necessarily be operational capacity in the likes of Thailand or Cambodia for this type of crime. We have to get down there on the ground and teach them and guide them and bring them through this type of work. We're constantly sending new jobs down to people, not just with victim identification, but also people who possess and distribute. We circulate around the world the intelligence required for them to go and do searches, and occasionally a country will request assistance and we'll go and assist them, you know.
And would you actually be physically undercover, or are you digitally undercover?
Digitally undercover. I mean, the idea of a supranational investigation squad, it doesn't exist at this time, but our role is more coordination, transference of skills, helping people to understand. This is a relatively new issue, even in Ireland. It's definitely a new issue in the likes of Angola or Cairo, or, you know, these different countries.
I mean,
and
the internet has allowed, it has facilitated this kind of crime, the sharing of stuff. It's so easy to file share across the internet. Are there ways, though, in which the laws could be changed? You know, the protocols that internet service providers have to observe. I mean, do you need more cooperation from the big servers?
Oh, well, certainly we are constantly pushing. I mean, we can't do this ourselves. It's not an enforcement issue. It's not something you can solve enforcement-wise. You really need to look at the other aspects, the whole education. And I know I'm borrowing a little bit and I use it internationally, but I borrow the three E's from the Road Safety Campaign here in Ireland, you know, the education, enforcement and engineering. So by changing the way perhaps that material is passed and travels over the networks, we can make a difference. And there is a whole blocking movement out there, an area, a place of filtering this material, which essentially is illegal in most countries. And then this is what we're talking about. This is why I'll bring you back again to the fact that, you know, we're dealing with under 10 years of age. We're dealing with horrific sexual abuse. We're dealing with the innocence robbed of
these
children.
But the technical challenge of filtering, for example, as you said, you can have swimwear shots on the beach, Sports Illustrated calendar or something on the internet.
But you must balance that with freedom of expression, Pat. You must balance it with all the rights of people.
No, I'm just wondering, those filters that might detect a certain level of a percentage of skin in the
image. That's one
image.
Way, but there are
other
easier ways.
But then a swimwear
ways.
Shoot for, or a lingerie shoot for Victoria's Secret.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. That should be there.
Yes, Absolutely, and there is that balance to be got, and there is a movement out there to ask internet service providers to block and to filter access to illegal websites, and we would see that as a prevention measure. Simple policing, its cheapest form of policing is prevention, and we ask the internet service providers, we will provide them with a list, and we ask them to block that list of websites.
Could there be an international law that says, you know, any sites that we know are dangerous sites that we provide in, say, within the EU to anyone operating a server in the EU, that you cannot access those or allow access?
I think there's an EU directive actually out, if not today, it's coming, you know, directing countries to put in place something to block this type of... We would see that these sites and certainly other areas like out on peer-to-peer and IRC, and I could go on and on and on in relation to it. These are areas where it is illegal material being exchanged. That illegal material, while we can talk at a base level illegal, is also fueling a demand, and that demand is met only by the abuse of children.
Yeah, and new children being
Correct.
Abused by new perpetrators.
Correct.
You haven't mentioned organised crime in this. You've mentioned peer-to-peer exchanges and so on. So in terms of the scale of it, I don't know how big it is, but is there an element of organised crime who's actually selling the stuff?
There has been, where the children are just a commodity, no more than drugs or guns or whatever, in order to turn a buck. We have had a case very recently in Operation Basket we took down last year, and there was about 250 websites there, a lot of money involved. Previous to that was Operation Tornado. But again, you know, here is a very good example of, going back to your previous question, here's a very good example of where industry, like PayPal and the credit card people, exactly, the Visas, the American Expresses, they work together with us in what's called the International Financial Coalition out of Washington, D.C. And we work very closely with them. We inform them within, as soon as we spot that Visa, for example, is being used for people to purchase access to this material, they will warn the merchant bank, close that merchant account immediately or else. And it has been cases where the big credit card companies have told banks, either close it or you lose our business. And if you lose, obviously, to lose Visa or American Express would be a major blow to a bank. And so they'll close the merchant account.
So for organised crime, there may not in the future be much money in it because they won't be able to get paid.
That's the problem. That is their biggest problem. And again, we saw in Operation Basket, this recent one, where they were using classic money laundering techniques in order to get paid, because they're finding it more and more difficult to get paid. And that, for us, is a win.
But the scale of that peer-to-peer problem, and if you like, the amateurs doing it at home and swapping material, do you have any idea how big that is globally?
How big is a piece of string, Pat? Because I can tell you, I can go online now with you this minute, and I can show you, 10, 15, 20 people in every country in Europe, any country surrounding us here, I can show you 10, 15, 20. And police, you know, resources are not there to take all this on. You know, it's just the volume of material, the volume of offenders is it's a societal issue. You know, all these people are downloading material of children being abused. You know, they find it titillating to download this. They find it exciting, or they get aroused by it. And that, for me, is a societal issue, as to maybe perhaps educating potential offenders that, hold on a minute, guys, this material, while it might be sex involved, while there might be, you know, titillation involved, this is the abuse of children. These children are being abused. Now, if I said that to you, that this child here is being abused, you'd break down doors to get in and get that child out of the situation. But yet this material is downloaded by thousands and thousands of Western European men, day in, day out. And
these are not victimless crimes.
Correct. They are not.
Is there any evidence that when you do have a major series of arrests in any country, including our own, that it diminishes the demand for this for a while?
Good argument, good question, and there's nothing empirical out there. I mean, I can say perhaps yes, but then some people argue back to me and they say, when you publish the fact that you have done a big search in a particular country, you're actually advertising the fact that this stuff is out there, and you get people more curiously searching it, seeking it out, and then they become offenders in themselves, and then they get into this big cycle whereby it becomes a collection issue, and it becomes and then maybe that leads on to abuse. And that is a big question about the volume. You see, if you say to a police manager who has limited resources, you say to him, look, I'll give you 100 searches to do in the morning. These are all people who are sharing, distributing child abuse material on the peer-to-peer networks. he'll say to me, OK, well, there's 100 jobs there. I don't have people to do 100 jobs. I don't have the forensic capability to do 100 jobs. I don't have the go on further than into society. The judges don't have the facilities. They don't have the resources to do 100 jobs. You know, it's massive in that sense. So he says to me, how many of these are abusing their own children? And the answer is, I can't tell you.
Yeah.
There's 100 of these people here. Each one of them has an interest in a sexual interest in children. Which one of them is a higher risk than the other?
Just don't know.
Would you ask any one of that 100 to babysit your children? That's the question I asked them back.
We know the answer.
Very
Certainly
simple.
Not.
Very simple. Right. And it's a huge issue for policing worldwide. Worldwide.
Well, it's fantastic work. You're doing very valuable work. And we can only guess at the extent of the problem out there. But Detective Sergeant Michael Moran of the Garda Síochána and Interpol in Lyon, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Pat.